Mr. Kotriwan, I think you were telling me you were born in Luton?
Luton in Bedfordshire, yes.
Which year was that?
1921.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was an engineer working for Vauxhall Motors.
Did you go to school in Luton?
I went to school in Luton, Old Bedford Road.
And how old were you when you finished your schooling?
14 years.
Did you get a job when you left school?
Yes, I went straight into Comatars doing a trainee apprenticeship.
Into where?
Comatars. Comacaron. Made good lorries.
What were you doing when war broke out?
I was still working at Comatars and was in a reserved occupation. But after a short period of time, I wanted to join the Fleet Air Arm. So I went up to London to join the Fleet Air Arm. And whilst I was there, the Royal Marines Sergeant said, "Oh, why don't you join the Royal Marines? We have a flying corps." Biggest lie out. So I joined His Majesty's Royal Marines on a 12-year engagement.
Was that because there was some financial incentive for him?
No, not at all. I think it was like all of us young fellows at the time. We saw the war as a great adventure, I suppose. How mistaken we were, really.
How had you reacted when you heard the news that we were at war with Germany?
Well, it was obvious it was coming. I think that we expected to be bombed and gassed and everything else. And of course, that didn't happen for the first 6 months, did it? So, I don't know.
But were you dismayed or excited by the news?
No. I think I don't think we were heroes or anything like that. I think we were just getting on with our lives. We were only worried about where the next meal was coming from and things of that nature. The same as every day at the present moment.
So when was it that you actually decided to join the Marines?
Oh, it was in the April of the 1940.
What was your training like at first?
The training at Eastleigh was very, very strict. All of the instructors were older people had been recalled from the service, and they were very understanding, actually. But they did put you through it. Mind you, I think the training, looking back on it, was based mainly on what they did in the First World War, and really had no resemblance to what was going to happen at a later date.
Were you in any of the bombing by the German Air Force whilst
yes.
you were at Eastleigh?
Yes, I was. We were continually, every night practically, and my position, we did a short course on Lewis gun, and every time the sirens went, when I was on duty watch, I ended up on the top of the officer's mess, manning a twin Lewis gun.
With what kind of effects do you think that had?
Oh, none at all, really. I think we fired it two or three times, but... just for bravado, I don't think we ever hit anything.
Did any bombs fall in your immediate area?
Oh, yes, we had quite a number of bombs fall around the barracks, mainly in one of the roads adjacent to it was completely obliterated at one time.
Do you remember any specific buildings or roads that were hit?
Not really, no. Everywhere you went, you always took the tin out of it because of the shrapnel coming down from the pack out. But outside of that, you know, there's so much happening all the while, really.
How frightening was the bombing?
Very frightening, really. I mean, every time you heard a bomb come down, you said, good show, I can hear that one. It's not going to hit me. That's as simple as that. But don't forget, you're young. And everybody else is in the same situation. So I don't think you were frightened to that degree, you know. You were just apprehensive and scared to death at times, that's all.
Did you use any kind of shelter at any time?
Any pardon?
Any kind of shelter at any time that you used?
Oh yes, yes. We, if there was a shelter handy, that's the first thing you might have done it for, wouldn't you?
What kind of shelters
mainly
were
there? The shelters in Portsmouth were brick-built shelters on the roads, surrounded by sandbags.
What were they like inside?
Very crowded and smelly. But I don't think anyone bothered about that, you know.
How did public morale stand up in the Portsmouth area under the Blitz?
Absolutely first class. No query at all about that. I don't think there was anybody. Well, obviously people were scared, but you never heard, there was no one running around wailing. I think they were different. Everybody was pulling together.
Was there any hatred of the pilots who were carrying out the bombing?
I don't think so. No, I don't think that entered into it. There was hatred of the bombing, but I don't think it was directed at any individual.
Did you go into the centre of Portsmouth to see the damage there?
Oh, we often went into Portsmouth, and there was allowed shore leave, and of course you went all over the place. I don't think it was any different wherever you went. The whole of the area was subject to bombing at night. But you see, one of the troubles was that with Portsmouth, I think any of the bombers that had been to London on the way back, if they hadn't unloaded their bombs, they used to get rid of them in the Portsmouth area. As well as just bombing Portsmouth as a target, we were also on the receiving end of the bombs that were left from further in there.
Did you ever listen to Churchill's speeches at the time?
Oh, yes. Oh yes, he was. Don't forget that Churchill was thought the world of in the Navy. And we were the Navy, really, they were in the Marines. And, oh yes, I think everybody thought, well, if there's one man going to do anything about it, it was Churchill.
Did his speeches at the time, his rallying speeches, have much of an effect?
Oh yes, they stirred the emotions and made you feel as if you could beat anything. Oh yes, they were. He was the right man at the right time in the right job. There's no doubt about that. I'm not going to say any further than that about the present day.
What about Lord Haw-Haw? Did you listen to his broadcasts?
They were repeated as a joke, weren't they? And they were a joke.
So you didn't feel that he had inside information?
Oh, no. No, he was very good music all that time for me.
I think you first went to see Ian Ramillies.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how that came about, please?
Well, you just when you finished the training, done the gunnery course, and you look on the notice board, and the next thing you know, you're shipped to Ramillies. I joined Ramillies, and we did a couple of Atlantic convoys, and then we joined up with H Force, which was taking stuff out to round the Cape, convoying material to go up to the desert front. And it was during that period that the Japanese came in the war, and we went out Indian Ocean way to heading for Singapore. Luckily, we didn't get as far as that before we turned around and came back to I think we must have come back to Colombo in Ceylon.
How did you like being on those two Atlantic convoys?
Not very good. Very cold. Spending an awful lot of time on lookout all the time, lookout position all over the ship. Don't forget we didn't have the radar and all that sort of thing in those days. It was purely vision.
What was Ramillies like to live in? What were the living conditions like in 1941?
The same as in 1914-18, I think. It was an old boat and that was it. You were issued with a hammock. I don't think I ever saw it. You used to sleep on we used to call them a corker. All it was a rolled piece of canvas, and you used to use your life jacket, your life blow-up life belt thing, as your pillow. And you used to lay down wherever you could with that. I mean, you weren't allowed to sling a hammock, you see. They get in the way. They were just left in the hammock netting. You had to sleep wherever you could. I was very, very fortunate because I was number two of the 15-inch gun. So that meant I had a lot of space available up in the gun turret. So I was able to nip up there and get my head down whenever I wanted to.
What would you have had to do if you had gone into action?
For first degree of action, that was everybody closed up. I was the number two, that's the breech loader of the 15-inch gun. If it was second degree, just for for aircraft and things of that nature, I was the captain of a twin 4-inch.
Was Ramillies a happy ship at that time?
Yes, very happy. We had the commander was Bloomfield, who ended up as the vice admiral. I bit of actually admit it afterwards. And he was a South African of birth. Very, very strict man. Very strict. In fact, the whole ship was very strict. But that makes for a happy ship. The more disciplined, the happier people are. They know exactly where they stand. One of the things that's lacking today, actually.
Were you ever punished aboard ship?
Stoppage of leave, yes. Being late and coming on board, and you used to get stoppage of leave, but nothing serious. No.
Did you ever run into the enemy whilst you were in Ramillies?
You don't run into the enemy. When you're convoying, you suddenly see ships go up in flames and sink, and there's a submarine there. You don't see it. So there's no question of seeing your enemy at all.
But presumably Ramillies was there for surface raiders rather than submarines.
The heavy ships were there for surface raiders, and their principal job was to most any destroyers who were with you, and they were destroyers with you, were always short of fuel. You were in a position to refuel them because you had extra supplies. Water was another problem. Now, we could make water. We were one of the few ships that were able to make water, so therefore we could also pass water. So that was the big advantage of the big heavier ships.
What were relations like aboard Ramillies between the Marines and the Navy?
Oh, we were always much better than the rest of them, you know. No, there's an old saying you see in the Marines that the stokers and the Marines are always compatible. The rest of them, well, we're all at loggerheads, that sort of thing. You know, it's friendly rivalry. It always goes on.
Any other incidents that happened to you aboard Ramillies?
Well, after some time after the Japs had been in the war, I forget the date, we were involved in the landings at Madagascar. And we did the initial bombardments for the landings, and the landing was getting bogged down. Oh, to go back, we were the headquarters ship in charge of the landing, and we had on board the General Sturgis, who was the overall commander of the landing. And as I say, after the initial landings, they got bogged down, and they were called upon to go to the other side of Diego Savanes, take it Diego Savanes, which was the main place to be captured, to land at a place called Anserani, which was on the other side of the bay. So we steamed round, but prior to that, the destroyer Anthony had taken off 50 Marines, who had gone round to make the landing. But being on the 15-inch guns crew, we were retained on the ship for the bombardment when we came round the other side. So we bombarded as well, and when the whole lot had finished, we went ashore to help gear up, and remained in the harbour for some time. And it was while we were there that the Japanese submarine, which no one honestly knew was in the area, came in and torpedoed us.
Were you aboard ship when you were hit?
Yes. The torpedo went straight into B magazine, and by right, the ship should have exploded and gone up. But the theory was that there was two torpedoes, and the second torpedo exploded and flooded the magazine, so it didn't go up. So the next thing I remember after that, we were all called to, obviously, to action stations, and for the next two or three days, I think we were all different gangs were put together to help shore up all the bulkheads in the all around where the torpedoes had gone in, and we then went to Durban.
What did you personally feel as the torpedo hit?
I wonder what the hell had happened. That's as simple as that. I was actually going through when you went from one part of the ship to the other, you went down through a hatchway, through a small compartment, and up another small hatchway, when you went from one area to another. And I was in the process of going through there when the torpedo hit. And I can't remember what happened, but I must have been shot through the opening, because I just damaged my knee. That was all, a few bruises and that's all. But, you know, it was all over so quick, you don't know what is happening.
Did you go ashore with that landing part to
the
attic?
No, not the initial landings. We went ashore later for the clearing up and the prisoners and people of that nature. But the actual landing was just the 50 Marines who came from the... who were manning the 6-inch guns. They wouldn't have been required for the bombardment. So they took the 6-inch guns for this, for sure.
So you went ashore to Ansirani?
Afterwards, yes.
What did you see there?
Again, I had a camera and I took a number of photographs which I've been in the, you know, in the museum.
The Royal Marines Museum?
Yes. Of the quay. Nothing much really. I think the only thing we were worried about is every stone you turned over, there was a scorpion underneath or something of that nature. So, you know, these are the only things you remember, things like that. All one other factor too was the fact that there was a big rum store there, and that was the real rum, you know, the white rum. And I think everyone, obviously, all went ashore, obviously, where their water bottles full of water. And it wasn't long before it was replaced with the rum, you know.
What kind of clearing up were you doing?
Only the general clearing up of stores and putting things in order and marshalling up the various prisoners who were mainly the colours, you see.
There
wasn't many French officers there. I don't forget it was the French.
What was the attitude of the troops that you took in charge?
I don't know any too pleased to have it all over with. No, I don't think they were very interested.
Were any of them wounded?
Not a lot. There wasn't many casualties there, really. Can't remember these sort of things, you know, because... I suppose you get used to seeing the odd dead body about, and that you don't take any notice, really, you know.
Sounds as though they didn't put up a lot of resistance, then.
Not real resistance, no.
Were any of the French hostile?
Some were very hostile. Others... the reverse. I think there was a mixture. Some people were supporting the Vichy government, others were only too pleased to say it's all over, and I don't know the outcome, but I should imagine quite a number of them must have joined the Free French Forces.
These were French officers, were they?
Yeah. And French NCOs.
What happened to you after the torpedoing of the Ramillies and you went to Durban?
We went into dry dock for emergency repairs, and I was quite fortunate there, really, because all the ammunition was taken off the ship, put onto a train, and moved up country. And I went up country with the train for the guard duties to do with the train being up country. So our stay in South Africa was very pleasant. We also managed to get a week's holiday where we stayed with local farmer. We corresponded right up until a few years back when they died.
Was he British or Dutch?
No, a British descent, yes. Yes, they all treated us very well.
Did you ever come across any hostility from any South Africans?
Yes. Out there at the time, there was an organisation called the Ossifer Bonfire, which was Nazi sympathisers. And we were attacked once. Grenades were thrown at the vicinity, tried to throw them on the train, but didn't make it to try and blow it up. This is why we had guard duties. As well as us up there, we had a whole platoon, I think we must have had, of the King's African Rifles, who were also doing guard duty on the train.
Where was the grenade thrown, do you know?
The grenade was actually thrown from a passing train. But we suspect that it was only because it was well guarded that there was no other incident. You know. We did hear of other incidents, but I never personally saw them.
Was anybody injured or any damage from the grenade?
No, but the threat was there. It didn't materialise, didn't it?
The trains must have been going rather slow if they were able to throw.
Oh, yes, they do go slow out there at times. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Did you see the person who threw it?
No. I just happened to hear the grenade go off, that was all, and see the effects of it. But that was the only incident I can call to mind, anyway.
But you assumed it was the Ossifer Brandvark that had thrown?
Yes, well, it wouldn't have been anyone else, I shouldn't have thought.
Any other incidents in South Africa that you can recollect?
No, none at all. No, I think we were only too pleased to be on our way home, actually. As soon as we were repaired, we made for England to have the ship repaired properly.
Now, I think you left Ramillies, so can we go on next to D-Day, which I think you're also involved in, please?
Yes, I went to Glasgow just before D-Day.
This is HMS Glasgow.
Hmm?
HMS Glasgow.
There's general duties on board the ship, and had quite a view, I think, of most of it. I was on the upper deck most of the time. We were there just before HR, because we were going command ship. Because we were off Overmark Beach. That was for the Americans going in.